Now here on Radio 4, the final episode of the classic serial The Eustace Diamonds by Anthony Trollope, dramatised by Rose Tremaine. Pippa Nixon stars as the charismatic heroine Lizzie Eustace, now coming to terms with the fact that her magnificent necklace appears to have been stolen.
Remember, Lizzie.
What, Florian?
Remember when I'm gone. The diamonds.
Yes, of course. They will always remind me of...
No, no.
What, Flo? You mustn't upset yourself.
Surrender. You must surrender.
Surrender to what?
No, no. The diamonds.
You must sleep, my darling. You must rest. Everything will be done according to what is right and fair. I shall make certain of that.
The Eustace Diamonds by Anthony Trollope, dramatised for radio by Rose Tremaine.
Lady Eustace isn't well, Superintendent. She suffered a terrible blow. You must let her lie down.
Yes, all in good time, sir. Now, Lady Eustace, could you tell me, these diamonds that were in the strongbox, what were they exactly?
What were they? What do you mean?
I mean, what manner of jewel?
Oh, a necklace. A diamond necklace.
Which belonged to you?
Yes.
I've seen the necklace. It was worth a fortune. No jeweller in London would have hesitated to buy it.
When you retired for the night last night, Lady Eustace, were you certain that the necklace was in the strongbox?
You mean, did I look in the box?
I mean, can you be sure the jewels were in it?
Oh, no, they were there, in the box.
You'd swear to it, would you?
Yes.
Well, my condolences, ma'am, for your loss. You'll be hearing further from us, but I shall bid you good morning and let you rest. Good day to you too, sir.
Good day to you, Superintendent.
Oh, Lord George, take my hand. I declare I'm going to pass away. How can this possibly have happened?
God knows. Damn me if I didn't foresee some catastrophe, lugging these weary diamonds to London.
If you foresaw it, you should have prevented it.
And how was I to do that? I told you, the lock of Crabstick's sitting room door was expertly picked.
But that's a crime in itself. I've lost my most treasured possession all because that stupid woman was snoring too loudly to hear a villain come barging into the next door room.
I suppose he didn't barge, he crept.
Oh, my diamonds! I've suffered so much for their sake, and now they've been wrenched from me.
Here, take my kerchief, Lady Eustace.
Oh, thank you.
And think on this. You have been tormented for the sake of the necklace, but if the necklace is gone, then that torment comes to an end.
But it will not end, Lord George. I know it won't. It will get worse.
I can't see why. You won't be summoned before the courts to return an object that's no longer in your possession.
You mean Camperdown will give up?
What else can he do?
But the recovery order...
Worthless now.
Worthless?
I'd say so. Do you want breakfast to be sent up?
Yes. I'm hungry on a sudden.
Coffee and eggs? I swear by coffee in a crisis.
Yes, thank you. Lord George?
Yes?
Do you really think it's over?
We shall soon see.
Pray it's over. My tears... I so nearly lost you. But you're not lost. You're safe where you rightly belong.
Be quiet, Binky.
Shall I take the dog out, Lady Linlithgow?
Oh, no. He'll let us know when he wishes to be taken out.
Is there anything I can do for you?
Oh, for goodness sake, stop asking that question, Lucy. I took you in out of pity, But there's nothing whatsoever for you to do in this house, and that's that. I suppose Lady Fawn paid you £50 a year to teach manners to those girls, did she?
I had more than money, Lady Linlithgow. I had love and affection and laughter.
Well, you won't find anything to laugh at here.
Lady Fawn, my lady, and Miss Augusta Fawn.
Speak of the devil. Show them in. It's you they've come to see, Lucy. You better pinch your cheeks a bit. You're such a little ghost. I don't want them thinking you don't get enough to eat in my house.
I hope we're not disturbing you, Lady Linlithgow.
Lady Fawn, Miss Augusta, come in, come in. Here's Lucy. I expect you've got something to laugh about altogether, so I'll go away.
Oh, please don't leave on our account, Lady Linlithgow.
Well, you'd only criticise me if I didn't. Give Binky to me, Lucy.
Binky boy.
Oh, it's so wonderful to see you again.
Lucy, you look so pale, doesn't she, Mama?
Yes, you do, Lucy. Tell us you're not too unhappy here.
Well, it is a bit like winter, after life at Richmond.
Come back to us. Come now.
Oh, no, I can't. Shall I send for tea, Lady Fawn?
We can't stay long. We just wanted to know that you were all right and to inquire about Mr. Greystock. I hope he may have visited you.
I'm sure he would have come, but Lady Linlithgow doesn't wish it.
Why?
She thinks her sister's nephew can do better than marry an unpaid boarder in her
house. Oh, this is vexatious, Lucy dear. And no word from Mr. Greystock's mother?
Nothing as yet.
And when your 6 months with Lady Linlithgow are over, where are you to go?
I will ask Mr. Greystock what I am to do.
Come back to us, Lucy. That's the best solution.
But Lord Fawn...
Oh, he'll relent. I'll play the harp right in his ear till he promises to let you come back.
Oh. Oh. I'm coming in again, if you don't mind. It's dashed cold in the rest of the house.
Have you laughed enough?
Oh, Lucy's crying.
I'm sorry.
Oh, dear, dear. What's to be done with the poor child? The marriage will never happen.
She will return to us at Richmond.
Well... That's settled then, is it? She's fond of Binky, but not of me. It's better that she leaves quite soon. Now, I suppose you've heard the news about Lady Eustace, or don't these kind of things reach you out at Richmond?
What news about Lady Eustace?
She's back in London. But she had all her jewels stolen on the road.
Including the diamonds?
Yes, Miss Augusta. And I shouldn't be at all surprised if she didn't arrange the whole matter herself.
Arranged that they should be stolen?
Just that. She's clever enough for anything.
Oh, but surely...
Yes, of course, that would be very wicked. And if it were found out, she'd be put in the dock and tried for her life.
I'm sure Frederick knows nothing about this.
The Eustaces had just begun a lawsuit about the diamonds to get them back, and then, hey presto, they're stolen. Doesn't that look fishy to you?
I fought so long and hard to keep what was mine, Lucinda, against the most terrible opponents, only to be vanquished by some common thief.
You know the police found the box?
Yes.
Not far from our hotel, but the diamonds weren't in the box.
Well, they wouldn't be, would they? The villains reached some dark place in the woods and took out their knives and picked away at the lock, just like they picked away at Crabstick's door.
You know, some people suspect Lord George.
Oh, the poor man! I must reassure him that he's not guilty.
How do you know he's not guilty?
Well, I don't absolutely know, but surely a lord would never be so blatant.
Men do whatever they want, especially men with titles. You know, Sir Griffin Tewett has followed me to London.
Oh, my poor Lucinda. Mm. How are you going to hide from him?
I'm not.
I thought you loathed him.
I do. I've thought of a far better way to punish him and please my aunt at the same time.
How?
I shall submit to him. He'll ask me to marry him, and I'll agree, and Aunt Carbuncle will be in raptures calculating the exact sums everybody spends on the wedding gifts. The higher the sums, the more she will love me.
And then what are you going to do, Lucinda?
I must not tell you, Lizzie. See, Secret plans weigh heavy, but that heaviness just has to be borne. I can tell nobody.
Just as long as there is a plan.
There is a plan.
"5 o'clock, Mr. Harter, shall I close?"
"Yes, close up. I can barely concentrate on our day-to-day business anyway. My mind turns on those wretched diamonds."
"Oh, they're lost, Mr. Harter, but only for a while. They will reappear. You may count upon it."
"Suppose Crabstick was playing us along. Why hasn't she called on us? Suppose Garlett and Spriggs have got the jewels."
"Garlett and Spriggs haven't got them."
"We can't be sure."
"We can be sure. If they had them, there would be a sniff of them on the diamond markets by now. There's no sniff, not a trace."
"Where are they, then?"
"Where they've always been. In Lady Eustace's bosom."
"Is that a guess, Benjamin? Or information I can rely upon?"
"It's just logic, Mr. Harter."
"Was that a knock?"
"I think it was."
"You better see who it is."
"Mr. Benjamin."
"It's Miss Crabstick, Mr. Harter."
"Good gracious, Miss Crabstick. We'd almost given you up for lost. Why didn't you come sooner?"
"I couldn't."
"Give it a chair, Benjamin."
"You said it would be simple, Mr. Harter. You said all I had to do was to hear nothing. But of course I heard them come in and take the box. And then I had to endure the policeman's questions and perjure myself."
"That's not perjury, Miss Crabstick. You can only commit perjury in a court of law."
"Well, it was lying just the same."
"No, no, not at all the same. Some low-rank peeler in Carlisle. But setting all that aside, where are the diamonds?"
"They were in the box when I last saw them."
"And when was that?"
"When we packed our luggage in Scotland."
"And you never took your eyes off the box on the whole journey?"
"No. All I can think is that Lady Eustace took them when she came up with milk for the baby."
"And now where are they?"
"I don't know, Mr. Harter."
"Oh.
I'd been hoping they might have found their way to you by now. I was hoping you would pay me my 5 guineas.
"Well, we can't do that until the stones are in the safe of Harter and Benjamin, snug behind the 9 locks.
"I suppose Lady Eustace still has them in the house somewhere. But don't ask more of me, please, Mr. Harter. I played my part."
"But you didn't play it well, did you? We asked for your vigilance, and you let us down."
"How could I have known they were not in the box? And now she's punishing me for my supposed neglect of her property. She's paid me no money, not a halfpenny, since we got back from Scotland. I have nothing."
"And we have nothing either. Not a happy situation, Miss Crabstick. So, how are we to remedy it? You tell me that, and we shall all feel a lot better."
"There might be a new way, but it would be very dangerous."
"We're listening."
"So I would need more money to compensate for the risk."
"Ah.
10 guineas would be my price."
"Beautiful tea, Lady Eustace. Now, listen to some fine news. 5 seats have come my way for a wonderful concert next Friday. Some marvelous orchestra has come all the way from Germany to play Beethoven's 5th Symphony for us. Imagine that. 30 cellos and trumpets and whatever next have ventured out on a steamship. And we shall all go to hear them."
"Oh, I adore symphonies."
"Who is we all, Aunt?"
"Why, us three and Lord George and
Sir Griffin Tewett."
"Oh, it's the least we can do to include him, Lucinda. He broke off his Scottish holiday."
"You're right. It is the least we can do."
"Why, good, Lucinda, good.
I shall wear my red velvet dress."
"And that lovely ruby clip I gave you for your hair?"
"If you like."
"Perfect. Oh, you will join us, won't you, Lady Eustace?"
"I'd be delighted." "Well, Lord George, I suppose you prefer to be on a horse, like those people, and walking tamely along with me."
"I would prefer to be back in Scotland. By Jove, I would. Here, everybody I speak to believes me guilty of stealing your precious diamonds. When I get up in the morning, I feel that I shall be locked up before night. I can see it in the eyes of every man I meet that he takes me for a prince of burglars.
And it's all my fault.
Worst of it is, I feel a look of guilt is creeping over me. I go on thinking how I would have done it if I did do it. I couldn't keep from asking that jeweller, Benjamin, how much they would be worth to him.
Benjamin? Do you know him?
Yes, I do, Lady Eustace. Do you imagine I've reached the age of 45 and never bought jewellery for a woman?
Oh, no, of course you have. Did Benjamin name a price?
No, he was unwilling. But he told me they had once been offered to him for sale by you.
Oh, that's quite false. He made me the strong box, that was all.
The strong box that was empty?
A box like that is only as strong as its little lock.
As a woman is only as daring as her conscience lets her be.
Yes, I suppose so.
You look pale, Lady Eustace. Shall we sit on this bench and you can tell me everything?
What do you mean?
I mean that I can see into your soul. You know where the diamonds are, don't you?
No.
Now take my hand to give you strength. You know that if you don't tell me, you must tell someone else. You've been imprisoned with your bad conscience for long enough.
How am I to know that you won't betray me?
If you deal openly with me, I won't.
Well...
Come on, Lizzie, before you lose your courage.
I only did it to keep them safe.
Did what?
I took them out of the box.
And where are they now?
They're in my desk, in my bedroom.
Lord, save us. Half the jewellers in London and Paris are supposed to have the stones in their keeping, and all the while you've got them locked up in your desk.
If I'd had a minute to think of it, I would have confessed the truth at Carlisle. But why should I steal what is my own? But everything happened so quickly, and then I couldn't tell anybody. But I always wanted to tell you, George, because I thought you'd understand.
Understand? I'm dashed if I do. You've caused such a deal of trouble.
I know, but it was only because they're mine, you see. But don't take away your hand, Lord George. Don't desert me.
That's all very well, but what is a fellow to do? I don't see a way out of it. I think you'd better go to Camperdown and give them up to him and be done with it.
Give them up to Camperdown? Never, as long as I live. Oh, George, do think of something. I'm throwing myself on your mercy.
That's all very well.
Please don't keep saying that. Have you no ounce of love for me?
You're a very beautiful woman.
By telling you my secret, I've bound myself to you. Now I have no real friend but you. You can't desert me.
Oh, oh. Dash it, Lady Eustace. Let me sleep on it. I have no answers. I wish I did.
But swear you won't betray me.
I'm a man of honour. You may count on that.
Oh, Sir Griffin, my dear man, were you not drenched between carriage and door?
Well, it is a regular monsoon, but I was passing, and I thought I would thank you in person for the kind invitation to the concert.
Oh, well, I hope you're going to accept it.
I would like to accept it, but I wanted to be sure that Miss Roanoke was happy to include me in the party.
It was my idea to include you.
It was? Oh, well, in that case...
Yes, absolutely, Lucinda's idea. Now, forgive me for a moment while I fetch my lorgnette. Lucinda and I were playing at gin, and I'm having difficulty seeing the cards. Will you stay for tea, Sir Griffin?
Oh, no, I'm expected.
You well, sit down near the fire, won't you?
Thank you.
Where are you expected?
Oh, at my club.
Do married men go to clubs?
I beg your pardon?
If you were married to me, for instance, do you think you would still spend time at your club?
Well, I don't know. I suppose I would from time to time.
Don't look so worried. I was teasing you.
You shouldn't tease me on this subject. You know that it's all in the world my heart desires that you should become Lady Griffin.
Yes, I know. And I behaved badly to you in Scotland. I expect it was wet weather.
Are you saying that if the sun had been shining...
I'm saying that if you were to propose to me again, I would give you an answer you might like.
Dash it. Miss Roanoke, tell me you're not teasing now.
I'm not teasing.
Well, good gracious. In that case, would you do me the honour of letting me kiss you?
I suppose so. If I must.
It's all poppycock, Miss Lizzie, and you know it. You arranged that robbery at Carlisle.
I did not.
You're as black with lies and deceits as a worn kettle. You're going to be in prison before Christmas. Even Binky is ashamed of you. You hear?
Yes, indeed, Binky, it is a sorry tale.
If it is so sorry, shall we change the subject? How is that little Lucy person you took as companion?
Gone back to Richmond. Huh. She's another young woman who can't distinguish truth from falsehood. The marriage will never come about.
What marriage?
To your cousin Frank.
Why do you say marriage? You mean Frank proposed to her?
Yes.
You must be mistaken. Frank would never have done that.
Miss Morris showed me the letter.
Oh, my poor Frank. What date was on the letter?
God knows. The thing was chewed with reading and rereading. She's had it since the spring.
Since before I went to Scotland?
Suppose so. I've told her to forget it.
But she believes in it.
Just as you believe that poor Sir Flo was able to give you that necklace. Illusions can be tenacious. Come on, Binky. We're leaving. This room has started to smell of the clink.
Wonderful seats, Mrs. Carbuncle.
Oh, everything is wonderful now, Sir Griffin. You and Lucinda have made me so happy.
Would the mitre give us a reason for closing the premises, Mr. Harter?
What have you put so far?
The proprietors regret that these premises will be temporarily closed.
Due to a death in the family.
Will people not wonder which death?
Oh, let them wonder. Now, time draws on. Get the sign up and we must be gone.
Is the plan going to work?
In this world, Mr. Benjamin, nothing is sure. Except that if there is no plan, then there will be no gain.
Well, did everybody enjoy that? I never get to hear music played that way in Connecticut.
Oh, what way do they play it there?
Be quiet, Griffin. Just because you're engaged to marry me, it doesn't mean your jokes have gotten better.
Well, don't jump down my throat. Just because you're engaged to me, it doesn't mean you can treat me like a nobody.
Hush, dears. Don't be quarrelsome. Don't spoil things. Lucinda, show Lady Eustace and Lord George your gorgeous ring.
I say.
Isn't it a peach?
Lady Eustace is very blasé about diamonds.
No, I'm not. I'm just a connoisseur. It's a very beautiful ring, Lucinda.
So when is the wedding to be?
As soon as ever it can be. That's what Lucinda wants.
In case she changes her mind.
Is that the reason, my love?
Yes.
Well, that's blunt.
And it's very inconvenient, this insistence on haste. I shall barely have time to compose the wording on the invitations, but it's what Lucinda wants. Oh, well, here we are. Oh, my word, Lady Eustace. Who are those men outside your door?
What men?
Oh, police, they look like to me. Whatever can have happened?
Police?
Don't tell me there's been a second robbery. I shall be helpless with laughter, Lady Eustace. Helpless.
Your cook raised the alarm when they got back.
Back from where?
Been to what they called a tea party in a public house. All the staff said the housekeeper gave them a few shillings for drink.
I'm sorry. but it really is too far-fetched. What have they taken, officer?
We can't say, sir, because we don't know what was there. Lady Eustace will have to give us a detailed inventory, but everything has been opened that could be opened.
What about Lady Eustace's desk?
Yes, a desk upstairs broken into, very clumsily. Wood splintered.
Did they leave nothing behind?
Only a few letters, nothing of value. What did you keep there, Lady Eustace?
What did I keep there? Oh, just some money and a few pieces of jewellery.
Could you be a little more precise about the jewels? What items were there in particular?
I forget exactly. A gold bracelet.
You mustn't pester Lady Eustace, Constable. She's had a terrible shock. Have a sip of whiskey, Lady Eustace.
Yes, drink it, Lizzie. It's very hard on you to be twice robbed.
Yes, it is very terrible. I suppose it was Crabstick who planned it, because she hated me, because she wanted to have what I had. You can't own a single thing in this world without people wanting to take it from you and claim it as their own. And now, I have nothing.
I'm very sorry about it. It's a cruel blow.
Yes, it is.
To submit to two robberies.
But at least it brings you to my bedside at last.
You know, I would have come before, if I'd believed you would understand.
Understand your engagement to Lucy Morris?
Understand where my feelings lie?
Well, no, Frank. I don't think I do. You proposed to her before you came to me in Scotland. Before you took me in your arms on the beach. You kissed me. But all the while you were pledged to that plain little governess.
Please, try to refrain from insulting her, Lizzie.
How could you make love to me at Portray, when all the while you... What have I done to be treated so shamefully?
Nothing. I was weak. My weakness and your beauty compounded.
And love didn't come into it?
Lucy is the one I love.
And yet, you know you can't marry this little person without a sixpence. You, who can never save a farthing in your life, it's quite impossible.
But I am going to marry her. Honour dictates...
Honour doesn't come into it. You've done a foolish thing, Frank Greystock. And you know that you must get out of it.
Honour may not be important to you.
What do you mean?
It's said around London that you've told fearful lies.
What?
The jewels were not in your strongbox when it was stolen at Carlisle, were they? It is said that you perjured yourself by swearing that they were.
Who says this?
Everybody I've spoken to about it.
Well, everybody is wrong.
Will you tell a lie to me, too? Will you swear that the necklace was in the box?
You mean you doubt me?
Yes. I doubt you.
So then everything is over between us, Frank. All that we've been to each other? All our childhood adventures? And all that happened between us at Portray? Oh, Frank, can't you feel my heart breaking?
You've broken mine with your schemes and subterfuges. And for what? For a necklace you could never wear.
I did wear it, as a matter of fact, in Scotland.
Diamonds. And you set about ruining your life just to adorn yourself with pieces of stone.
Frank, don't punish me like this. I can't bear it. And after all that I've suffered last night, please be gentle with me. If I lose your friendship, I...
You will lose it. Unless you come clean with me.
I don't need to come clean with you. You should trust me.
And yet I don't. And I never will again, unless you do one last thing for me. To prove your honesty.
What one last thing?
I want you to go to Richmond and see Lucy and tell her...
You go to Richmond?
After my quarrel with Fawn, I can't be received there. So I want you to go and talk to Lucy and tell her that whatever rumour she may have heard, you and I love each other as cousins and as nothing more.
But that would be a lie, wouldn't it?
My future is with Lucy. But if I can't convince her there is nothing between you and me, I will lose her. Please say you'll do this. Please, Lizzie.
I'll think about it. Now I'm tired, Frank. I was awake all night. You'd better leave.
I'm sorry you lost your diamonds.
So am I.
Because it seems you need not have given them up, after all.
What do you mean?
I went to see Mr. Dove yesterday.
Oh, that long-ago turtle dove. What did he say?
He said that, in his opinion, the heirloom question in the Eustace case could not be proved beyond reasonable doubt.
What?
He said he thought you might have been able to call the necklace yours.
Sir Camperdown would have had no case against me.
No.
Oh, Frank! Why is the world so perverse and horrible? Why could I not have been left in peace to keep what was mine?
Can you see the French coast yet, Mr. Harter?
Thought I caught a glimpse. One more little journey to Paris, Benjamin, and we'll be very, very rich men.
Look at these waves. Suppose we found it.
No, this is nothing. Channel's far rougher than this in autumn.
It is almost autumn.
Nothing the captain can't handle. Would you feel safer if we went below? We can go below if you want.
And be with the diamonds. I'd like that. We could lay them out. Marvel one last time, eh? Because parting with them may not be easy.
Part we must, or we're sunk.
Today, I thought we'd concentrate on the seasons. Que sont les couleurs de l'automne, Nina?
Orange.
Orange.
Brown.
I heard something, Lucy.
What did you hear?
A carriage. It might be Mr. Greystock.
Let's carry on with the lesson.
It is a carriage. My God, it's Lady Eustace. Did you hear about all her robberies? There were three, at least. And now she's got no diamonds left. How can she possibly exist without her diamonds?
Oh, mon Dieu!
Augusta, sit down, please.
Qui est capable de rester en vie sans ces diamants?
Augusta!
Frederick's come out to greet her. I hope he isn't going to renew his proposal. I thought he'd quite given it up.
Is that chair comfortable for you?
Yes. Thank you. Although I am a little weak still. You know, I was threatened with a lawsuit. Did you hear about that too?
Yes.
The word prison was mentioned. Imagine that. But luckily Mr. Camperdown has given everything up now. He has no leg to stand on.
He's given it up? Because the necklace is gone?
No, not at all. Because the opinion of a real lawyer was asked. A judge. Mr. Turtle Dove.
You mean Mr. Justice Dove, who sits in Chancery?
I don't know where he sits. But his name is Turtle Dove. And he told Camperdown that he was quite misguided. The necklace couldn't be an heirloom at all.
Why not?
Because, as I said all along, it belonged to me. And Camperdown has been wrong from beginning to end.
Mr. Camperdown is a very learned and respectable man, Lady Eustace.
I wouldn't describe him as respectable. After all that he made me suffer.
And I made inquiries myself into the heirloom question.
I know you did. But, Lord Fawn, you should have gone on with them and not stopped where you did. The Eustace diamonds were not an heirloom. They were given to me and remain my property wherever they are.
Well, I suppose the matter is at an end anyhow. Have they caught the thieves?
Not yet. Crabstick has disappeared into thin air. Or into Kent, perhaps. Who knows? She took her one little suitcase.
Miss Crabstick was in league with the perpetrators?
Yes. My own companion. You see, in this world, one cannot put one's trust in anybody. Not even in you, Lord Fawn, a peer of the realm.
I know what you will say now, that my reasons for withdrawing from the marriage are no longer valid.
I haven't said that.
The thing is, I had thought that by now any regard which you might have entertained for me...
What of my regard?
That it had been dissipated.
Oh, did I tell you that? Or did someone come to you with a message?
No.
Well then?
I'd heard that you had received
attentions from others.
Attentions?
From your cousin.
Whoever said such a thing? Would you call simple kindness an attention? I would not. And you know, I suppose, that he is engaged to Miss Morris?
Yes, but I don't think he will marry her.
Well, that was precisely the purpose of my visit to Fawn Court. I have a message to convey to Miss Morris from my cousin.
Well, I see. It wasn't my company you sought here.
No. But now, I must ask you, Lord Fawn, upon what plea do you put an end to an engagement which was made at your own pressing request? On what grounds do you justify such conduct?
The whole thing has been confusing, Lady Eustace, but I am anxious not to behave badly.
Are you? But I think you are behaving badly. Very badly. To throw me over for no reason.
I can see how it appears to you. With your leave, I will tell you what I would suggest.
Yes?
I will endeavour to explain to you, in writing, the reasons which make me think it would be better for both of us if our engagement is at an end.
In writing?
If, after reading it, you shall disagree with me, I will then go through with the promise that I certainly made to make you my wife. I hope you consider that that is fair.
I suppose that is how Parliament men do things, is it?
Not necessarily. Only that I may do it with a clear mind.
Well, that is certainly important. Oh, is this your room? I'd expected it to be smaller.
It's one of the nicest rooms at Fawn Court.
Yes, I see.
Lady Fawn treats me absolutely as one of the family.
Ah, well, that's just as well, Lucy. Because I think you'll remain here a long time. Until the girls are all married, I suppose.
Why do you say that?
Oh, you look horribly pale. I say it because I think my cousin, Frank, once talked of making you his wife. Is that not so?
Yes.
But alas, he came to me recently and told me everything.
Told you everything? Told you what?
The truth, I suppose you must call it.
What truth? Mr. Greystock loves me and I trust him. There's no truth that can hurt me.
Loves you? Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Oh. He has the strangest way of showing it, doesn't he? Does he ever see you? Does he write to you as though you're to be his wife? Has his mother invited you to the deanery?
I will go to the deanery in due time, when he is ready to be married.
Oh, my poor Lucy. Do you not know that it is over? This is why I came here.
If it were over, he would have told me. He's a man of honour.
A man of honour, yes. Perhaps. But his honour is sorely and irrevocably inconvenienced by his lack of money. Do you have any little sixpences to give him?
No, but...
Only yesterday, I had to hand over £500 to pay some of his debts. And why was he able to ask me to do that? Because he knows I love him as he loves me. So, it must all be at an end for you and him.
You're wrong. I know his heart. He admires you as his beautiful cousin, but he doesn't love you. He's told me many times. He does not love you because he knows you are incapable of any true feeling.
How dare you say such a thing? How dare you indeed? I shall pretend I never heard it.
Don't pretend you never heard it. I say it because it's the truth. You say you came to tell me the truth. Well, hear one from me. There is no love in Frank Greystock's heart for you, Lady Eustace. Lust there may be, men are weak, but there's no love at all. There is a part of him that despises you.
Look at this. A soup tureen and ladle from Lady Teddington Smythe. Well, she hasn't much ready money to spare, I suppose. Or maybe she assumes Lucinda and Sir Griffin will live on soup.
Oh, Griffin can live on soup if he wants, not I.
You needn't display it prominently. Oh, here's something you will like. £40 from Lady Glencora Palliser.
£40? Did you hear that, Lucinda?
Yes, I heard.
Mind you, Lady Glencora could surely have given more. What's wrong with a nice round 50? Or 100? And we've had nothing from the Duke of Omnium.
Oh, I know the Duke quite well. I could have a word.
Oh, it isn't so much the value. I'm not mercenary, but it would look so well in the display to have the dear Duke's name on something.
That ship that went down in the channel. Yeah. They've found bodies now, and one of them is a jeweller called Benjamin. Wasn't that the name of your jeweller, Lizzie?
Yes.
Well, perhaps you should go and see if he's still in his shop.
Could be him. What a thought.
Yeah.
He could have been behind the robberies all the time and tried to flee to France.
Crime will be punished somehow. I've always thought it.
The diamonds could be at the bottom of the ocean.
They're never to be found. The necklace could be lying among the starfish.
What a waste. If only everybody had believed me when I said the diamonds were mine.
Do they believe you now?
Yes. I have a letter from Lord Fawn. A letter. He renews his promise to make me his wife, if I wish it. I think he realises he was much too hard on me and completely in the wrong.
Lord Fawn is a lump.
Oh, hush, Lucinda. If I were you, and confidentially, Lady Eustace, I would take him while you still have the chance.
Oh, God.
Take a man who can't talk to me plainly but has to put everything in a stupid letter. Why should I? He's nothing but a cache of government waste paper.
I'm sorry to spoil your fun, Lady Eustace, but I really would take Lord Fawn if you can. And do give up all hope of Lord George. He pretends to a grand life, but everything is borrowed. I heard he owes his bankers £10,000.
Oh, well. It seems I'm to be quite alone, then.
What about your cousin?
I'd marry Frank tomorrow, but he appears to be incapable of asking me.
Oh, what a stupid game it all is. I'm going riding, Aunt.
We still have 13 more wedding presents to unwrap.
We'll do it some other time.
Oh, dear. I thought that her decision would make her happy, but it doesn't seem to.
She doesn't love Sir Griffin.
And you don't love Lord Fawn. But we women have to calculate, Lady Eustace. I don't need to tell you this. We have to achieve rich husbands, or we are nothing. This is why I say to you...
I'm refusing Lord Fawn, Mrs. Carbuncle.
You're refusing him?
I just wanted him at my feet again, that was all. I quoted Shakespeare in my letter of refusal, but he's so uneducated he won't recognise it.
Oh, poor man.
I am constrained to say... Your lordship's scullion should sooner be my husband than yourself. Very apt, don't you think?
Police, ma'am. I believe you have a female guest by the name of Crabstick staying in the hotel?
No. There's a Mrs. Crab. Would that be her?
Oh, very likely.
What is it you want with her?
See this? A warrant for her arrest. And the crime is grave.
Oh, Lord love us, what's she done?
Just be good enough to tell me which room she occupies and I won't trouble you further.
Room 7.
Thank you.
Oh, that's her. Coming down the stairs now.
You won't need to handcuff me, officer. I knew this day would arrive. I didn't know when, but I knew that it would come.
Miss Crabstick? Miss Patience Crabstick?
Yes. I only did it because the world has not been fair to me.
Miss Crabstick, I am arresting you for the crime of being an accomplice to a vile act of armed robbery on the night of the 14th...
See here, on my finger. This is the only thing I took. A little gold ring. Just to feel what it would be like to wear it. To pretend that I was loved.
Come in, Aunt Jane.
Oh, you're up, Lucinda. Good.
Yes, I've been up for a good while.
Lady Eustace has just arrived to help you dress.
I am dressed.
Oh, I mean dressed for the wedding. Oh, my heart melts just to see the bridal gown hanging there.
I'm glad about that, because I'm not putting it on.
Oh, now, none of your teasing. Oh, here's Lady Eustace.
Lucinda.
Lizzie, be so good as to tell Aunt Jane that I am not leaving this room today.
Lucinda, dear, there's no time for this nonsense. It's gone 9.
I am quite in earnest. Lizzie, you'd better send somebody to Lord George to let the other people know.
Don't stare at me like that! This whole business has destroyed me! The very thought of Griffin Tewitt makes me ill as to becoming his wife.
Hush, dear. Every bride has nerves of this kind.
This is not nerves. I shall not move from this room today, and that is that.
Oh, Lady Eustace, help me.
I believe Lucinda is in earnest, Mrs. Carbuncle.
then we shall both be destroyed.
How shall I ever hold up my head in society?
At least you have a head. Mine is off. It's slain by a foul, death-breathing griffin.
Nervous, Griff?
I just want to get it over with and make her mine.
You know she's as mercurial as a racehorse.
Hang on, George. Here's the carbuncle.
Oh.
Why is she in such a stew?
Sir Griffin.
What's wrong?
I can hardly bear to tell you. I am so sorry. Judy, I have spent the last 2 hours reasoning with her, but all in vain.
Breathe, Mrs. Carbuncle, breathe.
Oh, that any of us should live to see such a day.
Well, where is she?
Refuses to leave her room.
Oh, refuses to...
I am so ashamed, Sir Griffin. I told her she has destroyed us all.
Refuses to marry me?
I shall weep for as long as I live.
Oh, mercy.
Damn and blast her. Dash and confound her. I hope she rots. I hope she's unhappy for the rest of her days.
Believe me, I did all I could, Sir Griffin.
Damn you too, Carbuncle. You've never taken her!
Very nice, Augusta, wasn't it, everybody?
Frank could have liked it. Wouldn't he, Lucy?
Yes, but I don't suppose he'll ever hear it.
Oh, Lucy, it's best you forget him now.
I know.
Mr. Greystock, Lady Fawn, to see Miss Morris.
Miracle! The prodigal returns!
Hush, Augusta. You'd better go to him, Lucy. Go into the garden.
My cousin came to see you. I think.
Yes, she did.
And I hope she was honest with you.
Suppose she was. She certainly said some cruel things.
Cruel things?
Very cruel.
But I sent her here, Lucy. I sent her to tell you.
That you love her and not me.
What? No, I made her promise to tell you the truth.
What is the truth, Frank?
Did she not say it? I asked her to visit you.
I wish she hadn't visited me.
Lucy, it must all end now.
I know, it's over.
I mean that the waiting must end. For you and me, the wait has made you unhappy, and I'm sorry, Lucy. All I want, all I've ever wished for, was for you and I to be together as man and wife. So I ask you again, will you marry me? Will you marry me now, at once, as soon as we can arrange it?
Oh, Frank!
Have you lost faith in me? I wouldn't blame you if you had.
No, I never lost faith. I don't know why I didn't, but I don't know why.
Because you knew.
Knew what?
That you and I would be comfortable and right far into the future. Always together. Always comfortable and right.
Major McIntosh of Scotland Yard, m'lady.
Oh, no. Tell him I'm not at home. I can't see any police person now. I need Frank here to protect me.
He said he wouldn't trouble you for long.
Oh, well, show him in. Is my hair looking pretty? Oh, Frank, the hour has come. I'm to be sent to the clink.
Lady Eustace, I'm sorry to trouble you, but with the Crabstick trial pending, I would like to hear from your own lips what happened in the 2 robberies. Without your testimony, I...
Oh, those horrid robberies. They've made me so ill, Major.
I can understand that. But I think we're near the truth of what happened now.
We are?
Yes. And you must understand, you're not bound to say anything to me that might incriminate you.
I'm not sure what that means.
If you've done anything wrong, I won't force you to confess it.
Perhaps it was wrong to own diamonds at all. I mean, any kind of diamonds, was it?
To come to my question, Lady Eustace, I suppose we may take it for granted that the diamonds were in your desk when the thieves made their entrance into this house.
Well...
We've arrested the woman Crabstick, who has confessed, who stated under oath that she saw the necklace placed in your desk here in Mount Street, and that this information was secretly passed to the late Messrs. Harter and Benjamin. But was she correct in saying the necklace was not stolen at Carlisle because it was not in the box?
Oh.
If you will allow me, Lady Eustace, to give you some friendly advice.
Oh, pray do.
You had better admit the truth of Crabstick's story, if it was true.
They were my own, Major.
Or at any rate, you believed that they were. And this, of course, does not quite excuse, but may explain your confusions about the two robberies. But you will admit to me that you took the necklace out of the box prior to the Carlisle robbery?
Yes.
I did not doubt this when I came here.
What will the court do to me?
The court will ask you to tell the truth.
Of course I will. But I'm so afraid. Tell me what to do, Major McIntosh.
You must go and see Mr. Camperdown.
Camperdown?
Rest assured, neither he nor anyone else will attempt to prosecute you for the incorrect telling of your story. But to ensure things may run as smoothly as possible, you must make a clean breast of it, and the Eustace family can then be informed that all is resolved.
But Camperdown hates me. He will try to take away everything I own.
No, no, I shall talk to him. I shall say you've been most cooperative in all particulars of this meeting. I will tell him there are no grounds for punishing you further.
You will? Oh, Mr. McIntosh. Are you by any chance familiar with the poetry of Lord Byron?
Well, Mr. Camperdown, I expect you've heard that the Eustace diamonds are at the bottom of the ocean.
Presumed to be there, Lady Eustace. Or have you found some further hiding place for them?
How unkind you are. Mr. McIntosh said that now that I have everything straight in my mind, he would stop persecuting me. But I see that this isn't so.
Straight in your mind? What a marvel women are. You committed perjury at Carlisle, and you know it.
I was only protecting what was already mine. Mr. Dove confirmed that you were wrong about the heirloom question. Absolutely wrong.
I could submit the question to a higher court.
But the necklace is gone, Mr. Camperdown. What would be the point of it?
Justice is the point. People must be punished.
What people?
It's probable Miss Crabstick will get 7 years hard labour.
Oh! She was never any good at labour. No good at all. I sometimes used to ask her to iron a petticoat or lace a corset. But she did these things very badly. What she liked was to sit in a chair and complain about the world.
And you, Lady Eustace, are you not ashamed of causing such a great deal of trouble?
What? Because I defended my right to keep what was mine? Not ashamed at all. I think Sir Florin would be proud of the fight I fought.
Proud? He'd turn in his grave, poor man.
He would be sad the diamonds are lost, that's all, for little Florian's sake. But I shall make it up to him. Is not a mother's love worth 100 diamond necklaces?
Dear Frank, there's a wild wind blowing up here at Portray, and I imagine your anger with me to resemble it, whirling all about me and trying to make me afraid. But remember, you were never able to be cross with me for long, nor I with you. I will forgive you your marriage, if you will forgive me my efforts to prevent it. And I shall, of course, send you sixpence from time to time. I'm quite alone, except for my servants and my little boy.
I would invite Lucinda to join me. But it seems she has vanished and gone. Nobody knows where. I suppose to some place where Sir Griffin will never find her. There is a handsome preacher, Mr. Emilius, who visits me on Sunday evenings. But it is winter now, and I'm not susceptible to any overtures of that kind. On fine days, I walk by the sea with my child, and I show him the sun on the water, sparkling like a thousand jewels. And I tell him, "You are my only jewel now, Florian. You are the one I love."
Nurse! Nurse McKinley! For mercy's sake, keep that baby quiet!
In the final episode of The Eustace Diamonds by Anthony Trollope, dramatised by Rose Tremaine, Lizzie was Pippa Nixon, Frank, Joseph Kloska, Crabstick, Alison Pettit, Lord George, Adrian Scarborough, and Mrs. Carbuncle, Lorelei King. Lord Fawn was Jamie Glover, Lady Fawn, Stella Gonne, Lady Linlithgow, Richenda Carey, Lucinda, Lydia Leonard, Lucy, Amy Morgan, Sir Griffin and Florian, Nicholas Bolton, Harter, Sam Kelly, Benjamin and Major McIntosh, Stephen Critchlow, Camperdown, Malcolm Sinclair, Augusta, Laura Hannah, Lydia, Ellie Butters, and Nina, Ella Dale. Original music was composed by Lucinda Mason-Brown. The harpist was Cecilia de Maria, the cellist was Alison Baldwin, and the director was Gordon House. This was a Gold Hawk Essential production for BBC Radio 4.
There's more drama next Saturday.
I read your book. What was it called?
I don't know either.
From a novel by Michael Frayn.
When you wrote this book, what were you trying to tell us?
Heaven knows.
Tom Hollander stars in a case of misappropriated identity.
I read that book and I was somehow expecting you to be, well, I don't know, different.
No, I'm pretty much the way I am.
The first of three Michael Frayn dramas on BBC Radio 3 and 4.
Oh! Ow! Ow!
Skios, next week's Saturday drama at 2:30 on BBC Radio 4.
After the news, Ben McIntyre talks about Agent Zigzag, the true story of a double agent in Book Club.